You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast.
I'm Martin Tyler, and you're listening to Harry Simeon.
Hello and welcome to this week's instalment of the Canton and Simeu Show, live on the Chronicles of Aguna YouTube channel and available in podcast format across both platforms. So before we get into any sort of conversation, you should be subscribed to both platforms. If you haven't subscribed to the Aguna Talk TV, the link is in the description. Just click on it. It will take you straight there. And if I'm not mistaken, Tom, you're closing in on 30K.
Yeah, about 500-ish away now. So yeah, any help is massively appreciated.
Oh, and it's fully deserved, mate. So make sure you get over there and help Tom get over the line. Right, lots and lots to unpack today, Tom. Lots to unpack. As I was saying to you off air, it's my son's birthday today. So I tried to stay away a little bit from the laptop. I tried to have one of those days where I was kind of dividing my attention up between work and him.
Yeah.
And in the end, I've just been completely absorbed by all the things that are going on in the world of Arsenal. And therefore, as I say, we've got plenty to discuss. And we're going to start off with the Dusan Vlahovic story, because that story is just not going away. It's been rumbling on now since the start of the transfer window. And there were multiple reports flying around this morning that Arsenal had lodged an official bid for the player, which had been accepted by Fiorentina. But neither me nor you, Tom, are totally convinced that's the case. So what's your take on what's actually going on and how true that story is?
I think the bids being accepted part of the story is a little wider than mark. Ben Jacobs of CBS Sports came out and also has confirmed that is wider than mark. Arsenal want to include Lucas Torreira in any kind of deal for the player as well. So the fact that it was a straight cash offer that was reported to be accepted, it seems a little bit off. It's going to be a moment where there's a lot of opportunists out there looking to jump on this story, of course, and come up with their own angles. But look, Arsenal want him. That's the minimum that we know. Arsenal want the player. We're going for the player. We're trying to sign the player. But it doesn't look like it's going to happen, unfortunately. I think both of us are pretty much lent on the side of it of a no in regards to our optimism isn't really there about this side of things. He's a player that we know would be massive for us and would transform the rest of our season, I think. But the player seems to want, anyway, to wait until the summer to kind of assess his options. Who's going to be coming in for him? Where can he move? With only Arsenal really able to come in for him in January. And I mean, whilst we're all Arsenal fans and we'd love it if he came to Arsenal, if you like take your Arsenal hat for a second, you can understand that. I mean, he's one of the most highly sought after players in the world right now. And if the likes of Real Madrid, Manchester City, PSG, Juventus could be able to come in for him in the summer, it would make sense that he'd be advised to wait. But then there's also the side argument of the agent possibly being too heavily involved in this, the finances with it as well. But yeah, no bid accepted at this point, but despite it being supposedly reported. But no, it's one that I hope we can see happen, but I just don't think it's going to.
Yeah, and the thing for me, and I tweeted about this earlier on, is that it's a complete contradiction of what's been said up until this point, right? You look at what's been said, and a lot of the noise has been around the fact that, as you say, the agents, the player themselves, are not completely convinced that Arsenal is the right next step for him. In which case, if Arsenal have been told by Vlahovic's representatives and the player himself, because make no mistake about it, conversations are held in an informal manner prior to you going, you know, for the player, then why would Arsenal have gone to the trouble of lodging that bid? Why would Arsenal have gone through all the paperwork required to submit an official offer if they'd indeed been told that he's not interested? So this is where the two kind of different views of this story are going to come to a head now, and we're going to have to try and siphon out which one or decide which way to go in terms of what's right and what's not. But look, he's a player we all like. He's a player we'd love to see at the club. What did you make of the videos of him going around the other day, seemingly waving goodbye to the Fiorentina fans?
Look, it was an apology. Like, in the moment, you get caught up in the whole furore of the idea. Oh, he's clearly waving. Look, don't get me wrong. It was odd. Like, it was weird to do that much. Like, to apologise three separate times after he scores, after halftime. But yeah, it was an apology that I have now no doubts upon reflection. But in the moment, you're all, and I'm, even the morning after, there was a tiny little percentage of me. I mean, we did a show in the 8 a.m. show, and we did one of the polls that you thankfully showed me how to do in StreamYard and on YouTube. 1,000 people voted, and 54% of people said it was a goodbye message. So it kind of showed you how many people really did think it was a goodbye. I still definitely think that it was an apology for missing that. It was a Panenka penalty as well, of all penalties, which kind of gives that disrespect as well and kind of the embarrassment of it as well. So, yeah, look, it was an apology. It doesn't mean that he won't not leave, but you know, in that moment, I think it was certainly an apology, even though it was very, very weird. I've got a question for you on this as well, actually. Something I've noticed in my chat box, and you may have noticed it in yours as well, is people being done with this now. Like, they're done with Vlahovic. They're fed up with this story. They want us to move on. We're not going to get him, etc., etc. I've kind of talked on a couple of rants, I suppose, on my channel about this. I've even written a piece on it today about how I think that's kind of the wrong attitude in a way to have with this, because Arsenal are, not for the first time, but it's one of these times where Arsenal are really pushing for a great player, a player that could really change our fortunes. And that's given me encouragement and hope that we're moving in the right direction. Do you feel the same way, or explain to me why you think it's fair to be like, you know, I'm done with this at this point, because it's getting too frustrating.
It's hard because I don't think you can have a go at the club for aiming high in terms of the players that they're looking to bring in. And I think this goes back to the conversation we've had time and time again about expectations being realistic and having that ability to take your Arsenal hat off and say, well, actually, this is how the rest of the world views us, as opposed to how we see ourselves inside this kind of Arsenal bubble. At the end of the day, Arsenal are a team that still have a lot to prove. Arsenal need to get back into the Champions League before we can be classed as an elite side again. And we're not there yet. So I think it's perfectly natural that when you try and approach some of the hottest properties in European football, that you're going to have to do some convincing to get them to come to your club. I mean, if it was a case where Vlahovic went, now, you know what, Arsenal offering a shit ton of money, off I go, then I would question Vlahovic. The fact that he's thinking about this next step, supposedly, because he's not sure about where Arsenal are at, is not necessarily a bad thing to me. And I think this is why, or this is where I think the lines can get a little bit blurred. If you want your team to get the best players in the world and try and attract those players, then you have to accept that when your team are not performing at the level that you class as elite, they need to convince them. They need to sell them the project. They need to make them believe that this is the right move. And that takes work. And I've seen a lot of people, oh, you know, he's a prima donna. He's this, he's that. He doesn't want to come. I think that's completely unfair. And it's an unfair label to put on someone who I don't think's shown that in his career. Just circling back to the whole, you know, apology thing to the Fiorentina fans. So I don't know if a lot of people know this, because I don't know how into Serie A you are. But Rocco Commisso, the Fiorentina owner, has had no kind of shame in throwing Vlahovic under the bus previously with regards to the fact that he's not going to sign a new contract there. And he's done that so often that the relationship between the Fiorentina fans and Vlahovic has become quite fractured. And that could have been partly why Vlahovic was putting his arms up after obviously what happened in that fixture as well. I think he's trying to mend that relationship. And Commisso is a really interesting character, as are all the Serie A club owners, but it's an interesting kind of side story to what's going on and might have something to do with it. But going back, I mean, if you called up Lionel Messi in the peak of his powers and told him to come and play for a sixth placed Arsenal, and he said, yeah, without even thinking about it, you'd say he's mad. So what's different here?
Yeah, no, I do agree with you. I understand people's frustrations, don't get me wrong. And like, I mean, doing a show every single day, as we both do, about transfers, like it can get a bit monotonous. And you talk about the same players every day, but especially in January, because there isn't the same variation of targets as you see in the summer transfer window. So for 30 plus days, because you had the lead up to the window, of course, as well, you're talking about these same players, you're talking about different angles, you're talking about all the different reports that are coming out, because you want to keep people up to date with what's going on. But I don't judge Vlahovic for, you know, not jumping at the chance to sign up for Arsenal right now. The famous Arsenal knock is not the same as it was before. And the players that we used to talk about 10 years ago that grew up watching Thierry Henry, you know, grew up watching very, very different players at Arsenal like 10 years ago, so compared to 20 years ago. So it is a very different kind of perception that the club has compared to what it does before. And I think that whilst, you know, we talk about this is the Arsenal, we have high standards, this, you do have to be a bit grounded and a bit realistic and apply the context of where the club is now and the comparison of the competition for players that teams like Chelsea and PSG and Juventus and Man City and that can offer that we can't on a regular basis.
Yeah, completely agree. Let's move on from Vlahovic a little bit, because I know that it's a, as you say, it's a subject that we've talked about over and over again throughout this month. But it is the big story. It is the big kind of news when it comes to Arsenal. He is the big high-profile target that we're being linked with. And so it's inevitable that he's going to be at the forefront of people's minds. Another subject I wanted to touch on, and it's brought up by Shahil Shah. Thank you so much for your very, very kind super chat donation, Shahil. Really, really appreciate it, mate, and appreciate you tuning in. He says, thoughts on the FA investigation on the yellow card. So let's clear up what exactly is going on here, because The Athletic have dropped the bombshell around about a couple of hours ago now, I think it was, at the time of recording, where they've revealed that there is a specific yellow card incident involving an Arsenal player that is being investigated because bookmakers had reported a unusual betting pattern, i.e. loads of people lumping money on this particular outcome and then it coming to fruition. Now, first of all, I've seen some stuff going around on Twitter, and you shared a tweet with me just before we went live, where people are speculating about what that exact incident was. Now, The Athletic in that story have not told anybody what the issue, what the exact subject of that investigation is. They specifically say, we know the identity of the player, but we will not be revealing it. So first of all, we're seeing shit tons of tweets coming through pointing at certain players. And there are certain players in the Arsenal team, not mentioning any names, who pick up yellow cards with more frequency than others. So understandably, their names are coming into the fore. But from your understanding, is this an investigation into a referee dishing out a yellow card because of this suspicious betting pattern? Or is this an investigation into a player who might have deliberately got himself booked?
As far as I'm aware, and I think the Athletic article names, I think they say it is a player. So The Athletic knows the identity of the player in question, but has agreed not to reveal it. Now, obviously, what your question was asking was about whether or not, because, I mean, we could be talking about the specific player and the identity of that player, but is it about the referee giving that specific player a yellow card at that specific time, or is it about that specific player getting a yellow card at a specific time during the game? No, categorically, we don't know is the answer, which we don't know at this moment in time. Everything that we can speculate on this is all going to be alleged, and the video that is obviously circulating around social media at the moment is a video of Granit Xhaka receiving a yellow card at the end of the game against Leeds, or towards the end of the game against Leeds, in which he's wasting time at a 4-1 scoreline. And the tweet that was posting this video was out in, I think, mid to late December, I think it was. And the tweet is in relation to a bet. Like, you couldn't write that, really, could you? It looks too perfect, if anything. Now, that doesn't mean that that is the actual incident whatsoever. That could be a huge coincidence. I mean, as you said when you were leading up to the question, Granit Xhaka is one of those players that gets booked all the time. It's not uncommon to see people bet on players like Granit Xhaka to get booked. It's not. The thing is here is that it's clearly a case where either one person has put a hell of a lot of money on, or a collection of people have put a hell of a lot of money on. And usually what happens in these cases is, and obviously this is just theory at the moment, but if a player, basically you can have a situation where the player will tell their friends, or their friends will tell the player, I'm going to lump a load of money on you to get the yellow card in this minute, or to concede a corner in this minute, or to, you know, score an own goal in this period of the game. And they tell their friends that it's going to happen, and it leaks out. because it might just be one person. One person, it may not be too suspicious. Like one person lumping a load of money on, they might be really rich. They might just want to lump a load of money on one thing. But when it's a lot of people, that's usually because that information's leaked through friend to friend to friend to friend. Yeah. And it goes that way. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. But, you know, we've seen players get significant bans for these types of things. Like we're talking not just months, but we've seen players get years of bans. I mean, the Athletic article references defender Bradley Wood was meanwhile banned for 6 years in 2018 after intentionally picking up a yellow card in Lincoln City's cup run. So, and I remember, was it Kieran Trippier that was banned as well for a betting incident? But I think it was slightly different in that case, because I think he only got a few months because it was like an indirect thing. So well, wait, I think it was around his move to Atletico Madrid, I think, at the time or something. I'll have to check up on that. But yeah, it's really interesting. But it could, if the player is found guilty of this, be a substantial ban. So we'll have to wait and see. What do you think about it?
I don't know. Like you, I'm struggling to really make sense of what exactly the issue is here. And obviously the information that we have at the time of recording is really vague. You know, it could be a player that they're alleging has got himself booked on purpose in a game of football to try and fulfill a certain bet. I think so. For me, I've learned quite a bit about betting in the last sort of year or so, because I've done quite a bit of work for some big betting firms. Mm. And it wasn't an area that I was particularly clued up on in the past, I've got to say. So last season, I was working for VSIN, which is the Vegas Sports Information Network, in Vegas, and they were doing sort of a lot of all their content basically around elite sport is around the betting side of it. So there was that. Now I'm working for a company called Bet Rivers, where we're doing a weekly podcast with them. And what I've come to understand is that betting is quite a complicated space. And what you do tend to get is you get these companies like VSIN, for example, who are a big broadcaster, a big channel in the United States, and they bring on betting experts to give picks and plays that people then go off and bet on. Mm. And they create their subscriber base in a lot of ways by bringing these people to them, on board with them, and then getting those people to buy into their subscriptions. And those people then, in return, getting a load of tips and hints and stuff that they should be betting on. And they don't guarantee you, but the idea is that if you sign up, if you follow what they're doing, you should, over the course of the season, make profit. So when I hear of like a big betting pattern, a big wave of money going on a particular outcome, I think to myself, it only takes somebody with a huge platform like that to steer a group of people in that direction. Mm. And that can happen. It doesn't always necessarily mean there's corruption. But of course, I think the Premier League have worked really, really hard over the years to ensure that this stuff doesn't go on. And it's not uncommon to hear of it in Italy, for example, or in other countries. I'm from a Greek background. You hear of it all the time in Greek football, Cypriot football. But I think the Premier League are really protective of their status as a league that doesn't tolerate this kind of shit. So I think there's, I think this will be looked at with a lot of scrutiny. And if someone is guilty of it, then I think hopefully they get punished. But a few people have pointed out in the chat, I haven't checked this. Sam LA, but he's not the first person in the chat to post this, says the Athletic have removed the following line from the article. The referee of the fixture in question is not being looked into.
Why would they remove that?
I don't know. I don't think I saw that line in the first
place. I didn't see the line in the first place, but I didn't read the article as soon as it went up. I did see I'm sure people following Eduardo Hagen tweeted it out and referenced the Athletic, but I don't know if he's just tweeted that out and made an error, and then since then it's been removed, or it was never in there. I don't know. But I mean, look, if the fact that the referee if that line is true and it has been removed, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's the referee. It just means that they haven't had clarification that it's not the referee, if you know what I mean. That doesn't point towards it being the referee. It just means that it's not pointed towards. I don't know who was the ref during that game. Was it Andre Mariner that was the referee in the game for the Leeds fixture? I'll get the tweet up again and have a look.
If we have a look at the tweet, we might be able to work it out.
I'm pretty sure it was Andre Mariner that was the referee. I'm just going to fast forward through this clip. If it lets me.
No. It's a weird one, isn't it? It's a weird one. Just while Tom's doing that, just a quick reminder. If you haven't hit that like button, what on earth are you waiting for? There are nearly 500 of you with us live right now, yet we've only got 91 likes on the board. There's no reason why we shouldn't hit 200 likes on this video. There's enough of you in the chat box. Moving on from the whole referee thing and the match fixing thing, and we'll revisit that at a later date when sort of more information comes to light. But the other big story that kind of broke this afternoon, and it came from James Benj, who me and you have both had on the show, was with regards to Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang's future. Apparently, Al Nassr in Saudi Arabia have approached Arsenal over the potential of taking Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang on loan for the remainder of the season with an obligation to buy clause in the summer. I feel like that would be a pretty good deal for Arsenal. He's clearly out of the picture, clearly not someone that Mikel Arteta is fond of or trusting of at this moment in time. He's got a huge wage packet, and allowing him to go there for the remainder of the season in exchange for that, meaning we get a fee in the summer, but we also get him off that last year of his contract. I think it makes perfect sense for us. But do you think Aubameyang will go for it?
Let me preface this answer by asking you a question first, which is, do you think we sign a striker during this January window?
No.
So in that basis, if we accept this deal, we'll have no strikers bar Balogun on June the 1st. Is that right, I think?
Yeah.
We'll have no strikers. Like, Aubameyang would have gone because he would have done that, the deal with Al Nassr. Lacazette's contract would have expired. Eddie Nketiah's contract would have expired. We will have no strikers at all. And I know, and I'm not kind of setting up this answer for me to justify that we should reject this. It's kind of pointing out how important it is we do bring in a striker in this January window, be it, you know, Vlahovic, or be it kind of just a second striker, if you will, someone that can be brought in and then we can go for a marquee striker in the summer. But imagine you're a club that's positioning themselves to try and sign a striker. If you have none, think about the weight of negotiating power that gives to selling teams in the summer. Because, you know, they could turn around and be like, look, you've got no strikers, mate. So if you want our striker, you're going to have to pay this amount of money to get him in. So it's a really weird situation, because I would have said, like you, absolutely jump at this. Like, Aubameyang's on the decline. He's got all this chaos going on at the moment with the stripping of the captaincy. He's now got these health concerns, and we do obviously wish him the absolute best. But if we can move him and his huge wages off the wage bill and get a fee for him as well, even at that low figure of 8 million euros, I think it was, I think that's of a benefit to the club. I'm trying to think, doing quick maths in my head, 300,000 times 52, how much we'd be saving in wage. I think it's something like 15,600,000.
That's incredible maths. I wouldn't have even attempted that live on the show anyway.
But yeah, I mean, 15,600,000 quid worth of wages saved in his final year, half that for the 6 months. I don't know if we would cover some of the wages this year or this 6 months that he would go on loan, but I mean, you could add another 7 million to that. So you could argue that we'd end up saving near 26 million across the next 18 months if his full wage would be covered by Al Nassr. So it's a huge possibility to save that amount of money, but it would leave us really short if we don't bring anyone in at all. And it would leave us in a really weak negotiating position for strikers in the summer. I mean, do you think that's something that the club should take into account when they make up their mind about this?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But I think it all depends on what's going on behind the scenes, right? We know Eddie Nketiah wasn't allowed to leave again this month. We know that there were kind of murmurs about him potentially moving on again. We know that he wasn't allowed. Arsenal apparently were quite open to him leaving in the summer, but he didn't. And Mikel Arteta has repeatedly said that he wants to keep him. I just wonder if there's, I wonder if we're further along the progression line with Nketiah and Lacazette's potential renewals than we know we are. And if we are, perhaps that would lead to the club going, well, actually, you know, we're not in that bad of a spot, and this gives us an exit plan for Aubameyang. I think if Arsenal accept this, it obviously, look, I feel like for Aubameyang, there isn't a way back anyway, but this would really kind of cement that point, wouldn't it? That this would really cement that kind of stance if Arsenal were to at least accept, you know, or at least entertain talks from Al Nassr. But the thing that that I'm struggling with is, although I think that Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is a very talented striker, and I accept that his reputation has suffered a lot of damage of late, is he at the point in his career where he feels like going and sitting in the sun and slowing right down and playing in a, with all due respect, weaker league? I'm not sure he's there yet. I don't know. And, you know, you never know. We've just seen Lorenzo Insigne sign for Toronto FC. So you don't really know how the player's mindset is and where the player's head is at. But while I think this feels like a really good deal for Arsenal and it gives us, as I say, that exit plan and a way of removing those wages, which might be the key, actually, to us bringing in somebody like Vlahovic, it just feels like it's too good to be true. And I'm not sure that Aubameyang is going to have it.
Yeah, no, I do see what you mean. I do feel like he would be open to a move to that kind of club. I do feel like he feels as if a move to the Barca's, to the Real's, that moment has gone. That moment would have been when he signed his new contract with Arsenal, I think. And Barcelona was said to be interested in that moment, but, you know, it didn't happen. As I say, I just worry about the depth. I worry about the negotiation position we put ourselves in. But it's a great opportunity to get a lot of wages off the wage bill. But he doesn't have to do this. Like, we could accept this offer, but as we're finding with the Vlahovic situation, there's a nice parallel there. The player does not have to move. They don't have to accept that. They don't have to do anything that they don't want to do. So it's, we would have to convince him, and Al Nassr would have to convince him. And I'm sure that the wage offer is probably even higher than what we're offering and paying him right now. But maybe he would, maybe he wouldn't. It's impossible to know. It's one that we'll have to see develop in the next, you know, up until deadline day. I think that the club would, I don't think the club would accept immediately. I feel like they may wait until the latter stage of the window just to see kind of where they're at in other striker departments and where they're at chasing their targets. But, you know, it's an opportunity that the club would be minded to accept. But whether the player would is, you know, anyone's guess, really.
Good stuff. If you are listening to us via the audio platforms, we're going to take a short pause for a message with regards to our sponsor, Athletic Greens. Check them out. Welcome back to part two of the Chronicles of Aguna podcast. It's the Canton and Simeu show. We're on the Chronicles of Aguna this week. As you know, we alternate between the two channels. So if you haven't done so already, make sure you click on the link in the description and subscribe to the Guna Talk TV. Help Tom get to that 30K milestone because he's nearly there. He's done a brilliant job and he's not far off it. So please do give him a hand in getting there. Make sure you subscribe to this channel too and make sure you're subscribed on the audio platforms. If you're listening via Apple Podcasts in particular, please do leave us a review. Right, for the last sort of 10 minutes or so of the show, we are going to be taking your questions. So get some questions in the live chat box, whatever you want, as long as it's within reason. Anything Arsenal football related, we'll take it. We'll take it on. So get involved in the chat box and start firing those questions over to us now. Tom, just to circle back quickly while these guys are popping questions in the chat. We mentioned Laka. We mentioned Nketiah. I've made my stance and feelings on those two guys and what I would do with their contract situations clear on this channel. But I'm interested to know what you would do with them. What is your stance? What's your feeling around the idea of potentially renewing these guys' contracts or if that's your view, allowing them to walk off into the sunset this summer?
I think you'd struggle to get Nketiah to renew. I think that's one we're just going to have to say, yep, look, it's kind of done at this point. He's going to move on. So I struggle to entertain even the idea of a renewal with him. Lacazette is different for me. I would entertain a one-year extension of his deal. I think that would be smart. I think that I don't think that ties us to him. I don't think that, you know, hampers us down with him. And especially considering this new situation with Aubameyang that we find ourselves in as well, it arguably makes a one-year extension of Lacazette even more of kind of a smarter move for the club. He's not on a ridiculous wage. He's on a high wage and, you know, expectedly for a player, how much of it he cost and how long he's been at the club and his age. So it's, I don't think you would need to offer him like an increase in wage necessarily to keep him. But I don't think that he will accept a one-year extension. There's been no indication that he would accept a one-year extension. There were some weird reports saying he turned down a 3.5-year contract from Newcastle recently, but I don't think there's too much credit in that. So yeah, look, I'd give him a 1 year extension, but Nketiah, as far as I'm concerned, is a goner, and you know, I'm not too fussed about that, to be fair.
Would you give Laka 2 years if that's what it took to make him stay? Because sometimes, right, as a football club, sometimes it's not always going to be on our terms, right? We have to sometimes, and we've seen it in the past, we've bought players in on contracts that I think even the club would have looked at and gone, well, that's not really what we want to do. Yeah. Willian, prime example, where you have to kind of go above and beyond to get them to sign and commit in the first place. So if Laka's sort of deal breaker was, well, I don't want 1 year, I want 2 years, do you value him enough to make that commitment?
I always find myself being wary and looking back to the Willians of this world. And I'm not saying that Laka is Willian by any stretch of the imagination, but he's into getting into that age bracket and he is on a high wage. However, I do think that he is very valuable to the dressing room. I do think that he really kind of helps the young players. And I mean, if you look at our squad, we've just let Kolasinac go. Well, I don't think anyone wanted to stay, but you've let him go. You've let Pablo Mari leave on loan. And our average age of the squad has got even lower. So we can't get rid of all of the experienced players in the squad, because I do think that would have a detrimental impact on the dressing room itself. So I do feel like if you said to me that he would definitely accept, and it wouldn't be for necessarily like a wage increase, a 2 year offer, I would be tempted with that, but I would still really push the 1 year ahead of the 2 years. Yeah.
Cool. Good stuff. Right. Let's take some of these questions then. Lots and lots coming through. Tom, I'll put this one to you. It's from Olivier, who says, would you take Guimarães and Isak or Vlahovic? So I'm assuming that's a two or one. Would you
two take, for one. Yeah.
Would you take the midfielder and the striker, or is Vlahovic a higher level, and would you prefer to just sign him?
I think that Vlahovic is a higher level striker than Isak. However, I don't think that the level difference between them is enough for me to say that I wouldn't take the Isak-Guimarães combination. I think those two would significantly step up those two positions for us. And I mean, if it was for the same price as well, you're looking at a great deal. I don't think it would. I think you have to pay more for those two. But yeah, I think that's a great deal for Arsenal to get Guimarães and Isak. And if you said they're the two that are coming in, I would be very, very happy with that.
Good stuff. Let's take this one from David, who says, hi, Harry. Jed Spence is the perfect understudy for Tomiyasu. Do you agree? And what do you think about Maitland-Niles' mentality for choosing to play for Mourinho? Is he finished at Arsenal? I think that Maitland-Niles is finished at Arsenal. I don't think there's any way back for him. I think that he will leave the club on a permanent basis come the end of the season. I fully expect that to happen. Going back to Jed Spence, he's a player that we've been really heavily linked with off the back of that game against Nottingham Forest. I've got to be honest, Tom, and I'm going to kind of defer on this one, and I don't know if you have a different view, but I can't base my judgment on that one game. He was very, very good in that game, but that's all I've seen of him. I've got to be honest, I don't watch Nottingham Forest on a weekly basis. I don't even watch Nottingham Forest highlights. So I'd be a liar if I said, yes, I know he's the right man to replace Tomiyasu. I think we've all seen examples over the years of players who have played completely out of their skin, not actually been that great. And I'm not saying that's the case with him. I just can't be sure. What about you?
Yeah, I've just put a link in our chat box to an article, because I'd like you didn't know anything about him. And so one of our editors is a big Middlesbrough fan. And so we did a piece where I spoke with him. And the first line of his quote on Jed Spence is, I'm not going to beat around the bush here. The last thing Arsenal want to do right now is sign Jed Spence. So, I mean, he was very, very kind of against the idea of signing Jed Spence. He finishes off the quotes. And if you want to read them all, go click on the article. He finishes off the quotes by saying, let me find the last sentence. it's plainly obvious that the Arsenal squad is in desperate need of both quality and character, and Spence won't offer you either. So he's categorically
is a solid, the bush.
Yeah, it's a solid no. And I've not seen enough of him to disagree and sit here and say I think he's wrong, because I've not seen enough. He was great in that game for Forest. But a lot of the context around that is that when he was up against a Premier League team, or when he had the opportunity to kind of show himself, he does step his game up. But, you know, every single other week, and when he's playing just in the Championship or when he's playing just a regular game, he isn't necessarily as up for it. So I would steer clear of Jed Spence.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we just got to, you know, we can't get sucked into the hype around the player off the back of one performance. I'd certainly like to have another look at him before I'd be able to kind of give you an informed opinion on that. Another few looks at him, actually. We've set a likes target of 250. And if we can get to 250, I'll give away an Arsenal scarf on the likes, because likes are so important on YouTube. And I know I bang on about it a lot, but it is really key to the growth of the channel. So please do hit the like button. If we get to that 250 marker, I'll give away an Arsenal scarf. Let's take this one from Mike Hertz, who says, can or should the league punish Arsenal, and he puts in brackets a point deduction, if Xhaka is found guilty? We've got to make this clear, Tom. We don't know that it's Granit Xhaka, but this is a classic example of people, and I'm not saying you, Mike, because I know you're a regular and I know you're always in the chat. But
Mike's a great guy.
Yeah, he is. But this is a classic example of how a story can come out, we'll find a way of pinning it to Granit Xhaka, and off we go. But actually, we don't know anything about this. It's mad.
I have sympathy for Mike, because you panic, don't you? You're like, oh, crap. One of our players is going to get done with this really bad crime. And no, Arsenal wouldn't get punished unless Arsenal were involved. Unless you've got like Vinay going, oh, Grant, Xhaka, I've got a great idea. That's not, you know, it's That's not what would have happened if this does turn out to be true for whoever it is. And as we say, it's not confirmed to be any specific player, and it is all just speculation at the moment. If it isn't Xhaka, I tell you, I feel sorry for the guy, because the amount of people that think that it is just based off that video. But yeah, look, I think that Arsenal fans need to chill on this. Just wait, just see what happens. It may turn out to be nothing. Like, it may just be one of those stories where it was just completely coincidental. So we'll wait and see. I'm sure they'll do their due diligence and go through all the necessary processes, but just chill. Arsenal are not going to be affected by this, to the best of my knowledge of these situations when they happen.
Yeah, good stuff. Let's take this one from Babu, who says, what do you think about the overall job Arteta is doing at Arsenal? He's releasing all the dead wood and bringing in young prospects. The results haven't always been there on the pitch, Tom, and the performances haven't always been there either. And it, no matter how much I support what Mikel Arteta is doing, that's undeniable. But you know, I heard a lot of people this week, and it kind of ties into this question, almost complaining at the fact that Kolasinac had been allowed to leave and that Pablo Marie is being allowed to leave as well. I mean, for me, I think this is just part of what needs to happen, right? Sometimes you need to move players out to clear space. For example, the significance of getting £100,000 off of, say, Kolasinac's wages off of your bill is massive. It's massive when you go back into the transfer market looking for new players. So I know the results haven't always been there. And I know we've had discussions before around, you know, how good a job he is doing and where we think this is going, and that we're still not always totally convinced. But I think in the transfer sense, I think he's done quite well. Am I being overly positive in saying that? Am I being kind to Mikel Arteta and Edu?
Regarding ins, no. Like, I don't think you are. I think that we're making a really good moves in the market. I mean, just this protracted pursuit of Vlahovic is a good sign that we're moving in the right direction with the players that we're trying to bring in. The six summer signings that we made were really, really good. Thomas Partey, Gabriel, good signings. And I think that there's a recognition that we're moving players out that shouldn't be in the squads. Pablo Marie was a bit of a panic buy at the start of Arteta's tenure. And I don't think that with the benefit of hindsight, they would have gone down that route again. I think they would have gone for a more Nuno Tavares style signing of a 21-year-old with lots of, you know, potential that can come in and it's got sell-on value and it's got potential. So no, selling-wise though, I think there's a fair amount of criticism rightly to be had. Like, we're not able to move players on as best as we would like. Saying that, we've moved on Joe Willock for a very good fee. I mean, Newcastle fans right now are thinking how on earth we managed to get £25 million for Joe Willock. We're looking in this window to move players on like Kolasinac. We've done that. We've moved off Ozil. We've moved on Mustafi. Moved on Sokratis, players that, you know, at the time that they left weren't progressing Arsenal forwards. So we've been able to get players out. It's kind of now the stretch from now until, say, the end or the summer of 2023, what happens in regards to taking Arsenal from a team that are trying to get into the top four to a team that are established in the top four and are now trying to push on to that next level. And you're hoping that we've done the right thing. I also think what Edu's done is position Arsenal into a place where Arteta isn't the be-all and end-all. So like after Wenger, we had to rebuild. After Emery, we had to rebuild. After Arteta, and there will be an after Arteta eventually, I don't feel like we'll have to be rebuild if it's this current group, because I feel like they're malleable enough and they're young enough and there's a lot more development to come from these guys that a new coach could come in. So I think there's a lot of foresight going on with the signings that we're making.
Yeah, and that's key. And I've said that before, that in my opinion, this is, you know, okay, Edu and Arteta are in cahoots and they're doing this together. But I think a lot, as you say, the recruitment has been done with a view to this recruitment being beneficial to maybe not even just Mikel Arteta, but whoever comes in to replace him should the results not follow. So I think you're right. I think there's a, for the first time in a long time, there's a strategy in what we're doing, a long-term strategy. And hopefully we will get to where we need to be. We're going to take one more question before we wrap up. Just checking in on the likes. We're still 14 away from 250. There's over 800 of you with us now across the multiple platforms. So please do smash that like button. Subscribe to the channel if you are new. Make sure you subscribe to Tom's The Gooner Talk TV. The link is in the description below. And you can find this show on both platforms in terms of the audio format. So you can find it on Apple Podcasts, all the usual places. So please do get involved there as well. Oh, we've hit 250, 254. Hey. We're on 254, which means that after the Liverpool game, when I return from the Emirates tomorrow night, which is my wife's birthday, by the way, I'm
going
to go.
Hold on. You're going to the game on your wife's birthday. Unbelievable.
Do you know what? I haven't even really broken it to her yet. I've been umming and ahhing about when the best time to do it is. And you know, when you walk in the house and you can just suss out the mood and you're like, no, this is not the time to drop this bombshell. That's what I experienced yesterday and the day before that. So I think tonight I'm going to wait until my father-in-law pops round, because he'll back me up. I'll have some cover and then I'll drop that. It then. I think that's the right time to do it.
Dearie me.
Yeah, I'll be at the Emirates. So on the post-match show, when I do get back from the Emirates, whatever bloody time of night that is, we will give away an Arsenal scarf to thank you guys for helping us get up to the 250 target. Right, let's take one more question and then we will wrap it up there. Ish says, tomorrow is my daughter's third birthday too. Happy birthday to your daughter. Today's my son's third birthday. And I thought the terrible twos would finish today. I bet Ish is
missing the game for his daughter. You know, I reckon they're missing the game. Yeah. I reckon, yeah.
Proper good lad is Ish. Proper good lad. Arsenal for Life says, these are the two most sensible Arsenal broadcasters out there. Keep up the great work, fellas. Thank you so much. Really, really Thanks, appreciate man. That. Thank you for the kind words. Scotty22 says,
that's so greedy. what an evening.
I've taken her twice to the Emirates and we lost both times. So I'm never taking her again.
I took mine to the Aston Villa game earlier in this season and we won quite nicely. So she can come back.
Big Fat Sylv Laggy says, Harry, I take your wife is not from a Greek background or else you wouldn't dare do that. No, she is. She is. So I've got away from it. I'm going to try it.
It's gonna run.
We'll see. Alex Martel says, I know it's not the preview show for tomorrow's match, but how confident are both of you that we can push through to the cup final? How are you feeling about this one, Tom? Big game tomorrow night, Emirates Stadium, a straight up shootout between Arsenal and Liverpool now for a place in the Carabao Cup final.
Yeah, look, I'm feeling good. I was on with Red Men TV earlier on today, really early this morning, talking about this. And I think that we've got a good chance without it being Mane and Salah. We've got a good chance considering with the Emirates. Got a good chance because I think that we're really up for this. We've got players coming back. We aren't sure the exact number of players that are back because Arteta was very, very cagey about kind of those that would be returning. We'll have to wait and see. I'm confident. I think there's a bit of a narrative to this game now where we're going to be up for it after the whole false positive scenario and all of that. So I'm looking forward to seeing what we do. And I'm hoping that we absolutely batter them, fingers crossed.
Yeah, I'm confident too. You know, I think you've got to be. I think this team have given us a lot to be confident about for the most part of this season. I think when you look at the spirit and the determination and the fight they showed in that first leg, despite having our backs against the wall and being down to 10 men, I think you have to believe that, you know, we stand a chance. And I think at home, Mikel Arteta's been very vocal, hasn't he, about the crowd being a big influence. And I do think all that talk is working. I've really noticed the difference in the atmosphere at Emirates this season. So fingers crossed we can be the 12th man, help the team get over the line, and then have a cup final to go to in February, which would be pretty cool, wouldn't it? Okay, we are going to leave it there. Thank you all so, so much for tuning in. We peaked at 800 live viewers, which is incredible. I know to some people those numbers are not significant, but to me, they bloody are. So thank you so, so much for tuning in. Make sure you hit the like button if you haven't done so already. Make sure you're subscribed to both channels. Tom, just remind people how they can find the Guna Talk if they're listening on the audio and can't click directly on the link.
Yeah, you can find, just type in the Guna Talk on those platforms. It will come up. If you have tuned in live, first of all, thank you, and do help Harry on the channel. He does great work. So do hit that subscribe button over here on the Chronicles. If you want to continue the conversation, I'm doing a live show in 15 minutes previewing the Liverpool game with a few of our members. So do join us over there. And then you'll be able to join myself and Harry next week when we go back onto my channel for the next week's show. So yeah, thank you, Harry, as always, mate.
Thank you, Tom. Always a pleasure talking Arsenal with you. We'll be back very, very soon with more Arsenal content. Hopefully, the next time I'll be talking to you, we'll be celebrating a semi-final victory over Liverpool. Up the Arsenal. Take care.
You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast.
I'm Martin Tyler, and you're listening to Harry Simeon.